Blog Talk Radio.
Are listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Greg Masters, the creator and producer and co-host of the show. Joining me today and serving as a regular co-host of this and future broadcasts is my colleague, Phil Marshall, MD, MPH, co-founder and chief product officer of Conversa Health, an innovative patient engagement and digital health checkup company. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. And today we continue our singular focus on innovative companies in the emerging digital health economy. But first, I want to thank and acknowledge the previous contributions to this broadcast of my colleague, Dr. Pat Salber. Together we've succeeded in launching this brand. Thank you, Pat. And now let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Phil Marshall. Phil is a visionary product innovator who is inspired to develop healthcare solutions that empower consumers to become healthier and support physicians to be more productive. Phil brings a unique perspective drawing from his expertise in consumer health, quality analytics, and applied informatics. He has successfully built recognized healthcare information solutions at WebMD and Press Ganey. Phil's previous roles in driving significant revenue growth through product innovation include VP of Product Strategy and Management at WebMD, Senior VP of Product Management for Press Ganey Associates, and providing product management consulting for Healthline Networks. Phil holds multiple patents, including concept and time-based threading of health record data, collaborative timeline, topic relationship modeling, and collaborative personalized video creation. Phil has a long time deep interest in music and is a leader of one of the world's top 15 drum and bugle corps for youth, the Oregon Crusaders. Welcome to the broadcast, Phil.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Greg.
I'm really glad to have you. And we're going to talk today to a pioneer in the digital health domain, a man who has perhaps contributed more to the creative destruction of medicine than any other single contributor to date. That man is known as Dr. Dave, D-R-D-A-V-E-01 on Twitter, but more formally as Dave Albert, M.D., a physician, scientist, inventor, entrepreneur, husband, and father, whose personal mantra is saving lives one invention at a time. Most people talk digital health. Dave Albert not only walks the talk, but models the path for aspiring disruptors to come. So, Phil.
Greg, it's good to be your guest once again this week, 2 weeks in a row. How's that?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. We're actually looking forward to talking to Dave. There was a rather interesting study published either today or late yesterday that we were going to hear directly from Dr. Dave on. But can you give us a sort of maybe an abstract overview of the gist of what hit the wires today?
Yeah, this, in fact, you're right. It just hit the wire today, and this potentially is a really landmark study. Anybody who has followed the wearables space over the last couple of years has probably seen the AliveCore ECG on the iPhone, and probably most notably, Dr. Eric Topol has intervened on airplanes with people having cardiac events using this device, demonstrated it, I believe, also on the Colbert Report show. This device, an FDA-approved device, is a way for people to do this, holding an iPhone and using sensors there, are able to record their their ECG reading. And the study that just came out, today from Australia was that 1.5% of the patients that had just walked into a pharmacy and used this device actually were found to have atrial fibrillation, which is really quite remarkable. Well, I'll tell you what, while Greg, you're trying to try to get Dave on the line, I'm going to reflect a little bit more on Dr. Albert's work, because I think that when a study comes out for a device that's so accessible like the AliveCor ECG is a true innovation in healthcare, and you have 1.5% of a population over the age of 65 walking into a pharmacy and being found to have atrial fibrillation for this device, you know, what it shows is that patient generated data, right? Data that's coming directly from the patient but interpreted with the use of technology, that this can identify people who otherwise would not have been identified as having problems. And this is an important, important issue, and that is, can patient-generated health data, as opposed to the data generated by the doctor directly, can it identify problems early? Can it mitigate downstream complications? Can it save costs? Will patients participate? These are questions that people are just now beginning to ask. And I know that Dr. Albert, once he gets on the line with us, will be able to provide a lot of insight into that. I would also add that just recently, the Health IT Policy Committee in Washington approved the Health IT Policy Committee work group recommendations for Stage 3 Meaningful Use. And that Stage 3 Meaningful Use set of recommendations included the incorporation of patient-generated health data into the electronic health record. And so policymakers in Washington are recognizing the importance, the value, the stature of patient-generated health data. And so by bringing that data in from devices like the AliveCor ECG or other wearables, that this is becoming an important issue. And again, we're just now starting to answer some of the most basic questions of what the impact of patients actively providing data into the healthcare system is going to have on it.
Phil, talk a minute or two about the significance of some of these technologies to burst through what are Esther Dyson referred to the healthcare industry in terms of being adaptive to new things as a calcified hairball. And, you know, that's the visual that got a chuckle out of many, including me. So what are the prospects for these types of technologies to get adopted into so-called mainstream medicine, since they really are a function of this creative destruction process, which engenders a fair amount of fear by the mainstream by mainstream medicine, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that's certainly the stigma that healthcare has, and perhaps for good reason. I think that when you really look at it, and you look at the patient's participation in healthcare in particular, and you ask physicians, how do they interpret what the patient brings to the table, because so many of these technologies are now extending out into the home. They're extending to wearables. They're extending through digital means out to patients and their families. And when you ask physicians, what's the role that all of that data or what the patient represents about themselves has in their healthcare, many of them treat it with skepticism. Many of them say that they, take it all with a grain of salt, and they serve as a active and important interpreter of that. And that's inevitably true. Having said that, when you actually look at the data that a physician has at his or her disposal for taking care of a patient, and now we're talking about the lab results, what's in the electronic health record, what's in the pharmacy record, et cetera, you look at that, and predominantly in that information is what the patient would have represented about themselves, whether it's their history of present illness, their chief complaint, even their response to a physical exam, you know, where does it hurt, is all patient represented. And so as we look ahead to gathering systematically this data from between office visits, like, again, the AliveCor ECG is going to be able to do, I think physicians are going to really, initially be skeptical, but inevitably they're going to have to embrace these kinds of technologies and the data comes from it. An interesting question is, like the AliveCor ECG, will they need to be FDA approved? Perhaps that will be a step that will be critical for physicians to accept the data from them. I think going to benefit greatly from Dr. Albert's input on that and many other issues. But you're right, the skepticism of the healthcare industry is definitely an issue. I think inevitably that will break down as this data becomes more and more central to their care.
So I believe we have, through the back door of Skype, we were able to locate and add Dr. Dave to the call. Dave, are you with us?
I am, Greg Phil. It's a pleasure to talk with you gentlemen. But by the way, you did an outstanding job. Thank you very much, Doctor. I am superfluous to this.
Well, I'm going to say thank you for bearing with us, Dave. Phil, you were brilliant. I'm going to back out and let the two of you chit-chat.
Well, Dr. Albert, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show with us. We were just reflecting on the potential landmark importance of the study that just came out that shows that that patients can participate and collect data in such a way that truly does identify issues, conditions early, in order to be able to mitigate downstream complications. And, of course, we were talking about the study that came out of Australia using the AliveCor ECG. Could you reflect on that a little bit for us, the importance that that has?
Certainly. Dr. Ben Friedman, professor of cardiology at University of Sydney, and I have been collaborating for a couple of years, and the result is the publication today of the SEARCH-AF trial, where in 10 community pharmacies we put AliveCor devices and were able to detect out of 1,000 seniors, so everyone was over 65 identified by the pharmacist. The pharmacist recorded the data using our device, and we were able to identify 1.5% or 15 people with undiagnosed AFib. Now, I will tell you that this is significant because atrial fibrillation is a growing epidemic in this country and around the world. Today we have at least 3 million people, and predictions are up to 15 million people with the aging of the population and the obesity epidemic, obesity being a major contributing factor. And so AFib is also important because it is a major cause of stroke. And so in finding these people who are in AFib, previously undiagnosed, and identifying their risk, because their risk is judged on Friday, the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology, and Heart Rhythm Society issued new atrial fibrillation management guidelines. And in there it said we should use what's called the CHAD-VASc scoring system for identifying the stroke risk of patients. And all of the 1.5% we identified in the SEARCH-AF study were CHAD-VASc 2+. And why that's important is that those patients, all under our best scientific guidelines, should be on anticoagulation to prevent stroke. So this is really groundbreaking, but because for the first time, we have definitive data that we can take a mobile health technology, a very, very cost-effective, because it was extremely cost-effective, mobile health technology, and actually, you know, contribute to the saving of lives. And if you scale that, and we're getting ready to expand that kind of trial to places like Kaiser Permanente and other organizations where they're concerned about prevention. You know, we're all going to get old. Now, hopefully we're all going to get old. And, you know, hopefully we all lead good lives, stay active, eat well, control our weight. But no matter what happens, the genotype will determine that some of us will have problems. And AFib is one of those problems that sometimes can lead to something that may even be worse than death, and that is a severe stroke where a person is completely incapacitated. You know, their family, the patient, everyone around them suffers tremendously. And if we can do something to help prevent that with a very inexpensive technology, we're realizing the promise of digital health.
That's great. Well, congratulations on the success of the tool to be used in such an important way. We were talking a little bit a moment ago, too, about overall the role of patient-generated data from devices or otherwise, and the fact that the Health IT Policy Committee in Washington just recently approved patient-generated health data to be incorporated into the EHR as part of Meaningful Use Stage 3. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about how what happens out there in the real world, like the collection of the ECG readings in your device or others, how that world might be able to most effectively interface back into the clinical workflow and the electronic health record.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, Meaningful Use 3, today people are worried about Meaningful Use 2, but on the horizon, Meaningful Use 3 is coming, and everybody knows. So I will tell you that major EMR vendors, I mean, the really big ones, we're already talking with them because they understand that whether it's, you know, the Mayo Clinic has shown the value of a Fitbit in post-cardiac surgery patients, quantifying activity, and just published a paper, or presented a paper at the American College of Cardiology on the use of tracking of patient-generated data and helping prevent readmissions. There's no question that patient-generated data will be important. What I can tell you is that from a physician and from a caregiver's perspective, we've got to take data and turn it into actionable information. You see, you don't just take the ECG, you take the fact that the ECG means atrial fibrillation. That gives us, that turns the data into actionable. Nobody wants to see 50 pages of Fitbit data when a patient comes into the office. They want to see that patient has remained active or become more active. Is burning more calories. They don't just want to see how many steps they've done every day for the last 6 years. And so I think there is the EMRs really don't want to see 5 million pieces of data. They want to see the actionable information that is derived from that data. And that's where big data analytics and things of that nature, as well as the patient-generated data, and the EMRs will all come together to distill, whether it's ECG, Fitbit, blood pressures, weights, to distill that information down to what can be used to help manage that patient. And it's also going to be a stimulus is that patients are having to become more financially responsible, ever larger deductibles, and that's going to get them engaged in being the managers of their own care, their own chief medical officers. And that's critically important because they will help drive. I mean, I have good friends of mine who believe that patients will drive the revolution in healthcare, and I'm not sure I disagree. They just need to be gently bringing us physicians along with them.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. Not only patients becoming their own chief medical officer, I guess, or physicians being more financially at risk for their patients' outcomes, what happens out in the real world with patients between office visits becoming more and more important, potentially as important as what happens in the 15 minutes in the office. And so it's going to be interesting, I think, for...
By the way, going to 10 minutes, right?
Or 7
more patients.
Right. So interesting is the process by which the signal is discerned from the noise and what might come back into the electronic health record. Certainly, physicians don't want to be overburdened with all that data, yet they might feel obligated that each reading that might be exposed to them come back in as part of the record, whether for legal purposes or otherwise. And I'm curious if you might just... help us put our mind around how can a third party, whether it's through the process of going through FDA approval or otherwise, really serve as an extension of the electronic health record to serve as that filter, or inevitably, will all that data have to be found right within Epic or within Allscripts?
Well, I think, you know, more than 50% of everybody in the United States is on Epic now. That's every patient, okay? So, you know, despite it is a giant number. And having just been in Madison, Wisconsin, an impressive company, but what I will tell you is, you know, part of what you were just mentioning, physicians worry about liability, okay? And they worry about if they're presented with 15 pages and they don't read the one page that has some critical piece of data just because they're overwhelmed, that they could potentially be liable. So that's part of the problem with being overwhelmed with all this patient source data that concerns physicians today. And that probably is inhibiting today their complete open arm acceptance. At the same time, Epic sitting there, because these are not cloud-based systems with unlimited storage, they told us their customers don't want to be deluged with data that they have to pay to store and to put in the record. They want so we've got two parties, the doctors, the EMR providers, that want distilled information from the raw data. And I think that's part of the of where, you know, the Fitbits and the Withings and the Jawbones and the Alive Cores can help as we take the raw data generated by our apps and products and distill it, enabling the information content to be input into the Epics, the Allscripts, the Cerners of the world, and the physicians to only have real responsibility to view that actionable data. And I think that's where there's going to have to be collaboration, sir, no question about it. That's where people are going to have to open up APIs and standards, and I think the government, you know, through the whole meaningful use bailiwick is forcing, you know, first of all, they forced the use of EMRs with a $50 billion investment over the last 10 years or so. And second thing they're going to be doing is forcing interactivity, you know, whether it's through HIEs, health information exchanges, or whether it's just through the players themselves. And then it's having the physicians become comfortable using that data in the management, the collaborative management with their patients of those patients.
Right. It's a good point. Dr. Albert, we only have about 5 minutes left. I want for you to reflect on something that was at least speculated on recently in the technology press, and that is Apple's health book. So it's speculated that Apple, in their new iOS, is going to be coming out with something called HealthBook, which would basically serve as an intermediary role in being able to store, relay, perhaps even interpret. Nobody really knows yet, at least nobody on the outside world, outside of Cupertino. And I'm wondering whether it's a live core or it's Fitbit or its body media or its other wearables or other services that gather patient-generated data, is the arrival of something like an Apple Health Book where so many people already have this iOS with them, will it be something that that disrupts the industry? Will it disintermediate some of the device firms that are out there? What role do you think it will play?
Well, we don't know, but we've all seen two huge technology giants, Microsoft and Google, kind of, you know, Microsoft's still in it, but Google got out, fail in the PHR, the personal health record business. I can only hope that Apple will do the kind of job it did under Steve Jobs, a magnificent job of creating and disrupting a new market, and that's healthcare. I hope that they will really move the needle and engage individuals in becoming the manager of their own care, and that health book, if there turns out to be a health book, will be the personal health record and will stimulate others and stimulate consumers to adopt it. As I say, every consumer is not a patient, but every patient's a consumer. So, you know, I think we've you know, we I look to Apple as a leader, and they have been, whether it's in music or smartphones or services, and I hope they're a leader in personal health. So all I can say is I urge them to charge ahead.
Okay. Well, what do you see on the horizon for devices like Apple's or Samsung's or the Windows devices that might allow those devices to natively be able to collect the kind of biometric data that a Jawbone or a Fitbit or a Fuel Band might do? And could that be disruptive to those parties?
Well, I mean, I wear a Basis now Intel watch, and I have a Withings scale and a Withings blood pressure cuff and obviously an AliveCore ECG, and I have Moves, the app running on in the background on my iPhone at all times, and so clearly some of this capability will be sucked into the native smartphone. Some of it will be on your wrist or on a wearable. I can't tell you that my crystal ball is not completely clear as to where this will shake out, how many people will go back to wearing watches. You know, the millennials abandoned watches, and now I guess everybody thinks we're going to have them back again. We'll see. I don't have a crystal ball. What I hope is that people by the tens, if not hundreds of millions, embrace personal tracking technologies, embrace tools like a theoretical health book, and become engaged in managing their own health. That's what I hope, sir. And if that's true, you know, I spend my time, I'm not working on trying to keep the 30 healthy. I'm trying to keep the 75-year-old from being in the hospital. And,
sure.
And, you know, I tell people, while everybody says, well, you're an mHealth company, I said, well, we're really an mHedicine company. We're not Fitbit. We deal with the patients who are all consumers, but they're patients first. So I hope that, 25 years from now, the incidence of heart disease is dramatically lower because people have changed their lives. And if our technologies can help that, then more power to us, sir.
Well, if your mantra is saving lives one invention at a time, I've got one last question for you with 1 minute left, and that is, what is the next one to come out of Dr. Albert?
Well, I'll be honest with you. We're working on many exciting technologies and working to bring mobile health to the benefit of patients. So what I will tell you is where we've started is not where we're going to stop. And I can tell you we will, my expertise in cardiology might guide you to the kinds of things we're doing. And I think we'll be bringing ever larger, more powerful partners and extending our reach around the globe to try to, again, address all those patients who are consumers and get them to get engaged in their own care. That is my personal goal, and I think by doing that, we will do exactly what I say. We'll save lives, this and the next invention at a time.
Well, very good, and congratulations on all that you've been able to accomplish and all that you're working on. Again, congratulations on the landmark study that came out that showed that patient-generated ECG data can identify patients early and potentially really save lives, and it's a remarkable feat. And so with that, Greg, perhaps we turn it back over to you.
Okay, I want to thank my co-host and inspiring salvaging the challenges of the technical side of the broadcast today. Thank you, Dr. Dave, for hanging with us. So sorry we had an abbreviated session with you, but we have tweeted a couple of these noteworthy quotes, including the link to the aforementioned published study. So thank you, Dr. Phil Marshall. Thank you, Dr. Dave Alpert, for the abbreviated update. Great news on the study released today. And you are listening to This Week in Health Innovation and the Blog Talk Radio Network. We do this weekly at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. Join us next week for another episode. Greg Master saying bye now. I